Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. We are back. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. And we don't tolerate sponsors. No, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everybody back on board, and I'm good to be back. I'm glad to be back. 100%. 110%, if that's possible. Finally having recovered from being laid waste by two consecutive viruses. And then a trip. I'll get to that later. I'll get to that in due time because it must be reported. But I want to start with a story that I wasn't sure whether to put this in the war file or the domestic tranquility file, but it was a stabbing rampage. That's right, I said a stabbing rampage that occurred last Tuesday. Do you all remember this? Do you remember the stabbing rampage? I remember I happened to be in the airport watching CNN, and they had the live helicopter and the cameras and the blood on the street and the gutter. It was big news last Tuesday. And I have a report here from the New York Daily News. Last Tuesday, a man wielding a butcher knife stabbed three people along Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles, California, before police shot him. Yes, this story is from last Wednesday. The attacker out there in Los Angeles, the machete-wielding attacker, was described as a black man, possibly in his 30s, and apparently died at the scene after police shot him. The man has not been identified, says the Daily News. This was last Wednesday. Well, I've been checking the story since then. Here we are now, 5 days later. What, Tuesday? Yeah. 5 days later, the suspect has still not been identified, at least not publicly in any news reports that I can find. And I went 6 pages deep into Google and saw stories on every stabbing rampage that there's been in the last 3 months. And there's been quite a few, stabbing rampages being something of the order of the day, part of the Barack Obama legacy, stabbing rampages. They happen quite regularly. And this one was of particular interest, especially to the reporters there at CNN at the airport, which is the only place anybody watches CNN for more than 5 minutes. And that's because you have no choice. You watch CNN, you're at the airport. Because this attack took place right outside CNN's offices there on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles, California. But here we are 5 days later, and no one has identified the suspect. In fact, I saw conflicting reports as to whether or not the guy died. We don't even know if the attacker was dead or alive, is dead or alive. We don't know why he went on a machete rampage, and we don't know who he is. And I don't understand this. Why does a story that CNN had, they got the helicopters in the air, and now the story just disappears into an abyss? A news abyss. Nobody knows who this fellow was. And I just find that interesting. That's all. I mean, are stabbing rampages that common now that they just kind of fall off the radar and we don't even find out who the guy is? I don't know. I guess there are other extremely important things to report on. Supreme Court nominees, travel bans and judges' orders and appeals, the Ninth Circuit. You won't hear any of that today because, well, there's nothing to report. I don't know what's going to happen. But what's happening right now here at the McBurney compound is that the scent of a pork delicacy that is in the crock pot right now that was prepared earlier today by my extremely attractive audio engineer. The scent and the flavor is just permeating the entire compound from the crock pot. And we're sitting here, trying to do the show. Oh, and you can smell this pork delicacy. And it brings to mind the fact that I have begun watching my diet, which I have never had to do in my entire life. But now I have to. Because, well, I'm getting older, and you get to a point at some point in your life where you actually have to moderate what you consume as far as food. You can't just eat bacon double cheeseburgers all the time. There comes a point where you just have to cut that out. So I had the occasion to be in Houston, Texas earlier this week. Not for the Super Bowl. I was working down in Houston, Texas. And I went hunting for dinner, and I had it in my mind that I was going to eat fish. No matter what, I was going to eat fish, because I will confess that I had had a burger the night before. And I was going to moderate my intake of red meat and eat fish. And so I found myself going from place to place looking for a fish sandwich, is what I was looking for. Because I'm not willing yet to go to the full-on grilled fish with green beans, corn. And I'll do a fish sandwich if it's deep fried and there's some tartar sauce involved. Not quite ready for the full-on grilled fish yet. I'm sure I'll get to that point. But I was looking for a fish sandwich, and I could not locate a fish sandwich because the first sandwich shop that I went to, which was reported online to have the best fish sandwich in Houston, Texas. By the way, Houston, I've got to tell you people, if you're living in Houston, Houston is the only major city I've ever visited that has no real character at all. It's just like every other city everywhere else, except it's Houston. And is Houston famous for anything as far as food? Or culture, or I think Houston is just famous for being just massive. And it is that. It's massive. But just no real character. And as hard as the local news media and the local politicians and all the people down there were trying to dress up Houston with some kind of personality for the Super Bowl, it just didn't stick. There's just no, they're there. I'm sorry, Houston. I know you're the third largest city in the United States. And the largest city as far as square mileage, maybe in the world, just a massive city. But just really thin on the character. Seafood, Houston? No, it's not really famous for seafood. No. Steak, I guess. Texas is famous for steak, but Houston in particular? Nah. Desserts? I just can't think of anything that Houston is known for, except for, anyway, I was there this past week. I'm out looking for my fish sandwich. The first shop I go to no longer exists. It's all boarded up and closed down. So I fall back on Jack in the Box because they have a cod fillet. And I thought, cod fillet, that's what I'm looking for. They were sold out. Not a cod to be found. And no backup fish there at the Jack in the Box. I'm trying to stay relatively close to where I was working, so I ended up at Whataburger. Now, Texas is known for Whataburger, and anyone outside Texas has never heard of Whataburger because Whataburger would never make it anywhere outside of Texas. It's probably the worst fast food in the history of such things. Just one notch below Del Taco, I think, as far as... Yeah, well, nobody can compete with the horribleness of Del Taco, in my opinion. And by the way, they're not sponsors of the program. Nor is Whataburger. But I have to say, by the time I got to Whataburger, I was starving, figuratively speaking. I was hungry. And so I ordered two fish sandwiches at Whataburger, never even wanting to ask what kind of fish they used. I assumed it was not cod. Whatever kind of fish it was the worst fish sandwich in the history of such things. And I ate both of them just out of sheer hunger. But I think it was the worst culinary experience of my entire life. And I'm probably off fish sandwiches for life. I may go to the grilled fish with the three sprigs of asparagus and two baby carrots, that type of thing. I may be there because I may never be able to watch. I'm sorry, I may never be able to eat or watch or even see another fish sandwich without, you know, having to swallow really hard. It was just awful. And so we are not soliciting Whataburger to advertise on the program. And, of course, this is just my opinion. You may find their fish sandwich to be utterly delectable. And in some people's taste, it may be just that. But for me, it could be. I was in a rather rough part of Houston. And, by the way, I've been all around Houston. There are only rough parts of Houston, as far as I can tell. That's a rough town. It's an interesting town, and I don't recommend it. If you can avoid it, please do. But the people there are fantastic. I met some fantastic people there. It's just that the tilapia slash catfish slash whatever that was, which was deep fried in cardboard, was just, I just hope I never have to go through that again. All right, now. So there, we've gotten the important stories out of the way. Had to update you on the CNN rampage. And, of course, my diet, which I'm sure is of interest to everyone. And now let's move over to San Antonio, Texas, where we will go into the last laugh file. That's right, I said the last laugh file. You remember last week we updated you on a young man. Well, he wasn't so young. But a gangbanger who was, his sentence was commuted by Barry Ho before he left office. Well, we have an update on another one of Barry's fine parolees, or whatever you call them. What would you call that? A commutee? A San Antonio man was freed from life in prison by President Barack Obama. This is according to My San Antonio, a fairly reliable news source. He was freed from life in prison. He had been sentenced to life. Let's see, 68 years old, sentenced to life for cocaine and heroin distribution. And his sentence was commuted by Barry, and he got out back in 2015. He was profiled last year in the Express News about his readjustment to life on the outside. I'm sure it was a very feel-good, warm, and fuzzy story about this poor guy, no doubt of African-American heritage, unjustly imprisoned by the man for distributing cocaine and heroin, which isn't all that serious of a crime in the eyes of Barry Ho. And so this fellow, Robert Gill, 68 years old now, got out of prison, got his own television special. Everybody felt warm and fuzzy until last week when Mr. Gill was taken to federal court last Friday. He's been ordered held without bond. He is charged with possession and intent to distribute 500 grams or more of cocaine. And for those of you who may not be familiar with the whole cocaine business, that's a lot of cocaine, 500 grams or more. So he's going back to prison. Well, maybe. He's in jail right now. Let's see, he was one of about 1,700 federal inmates who Barry commuted as part of his campaign to give relief to nonviolent offenders serving long prison terms that dated to a frenzied period in the nation's war on drugs. After all, it was only cocaine and heroin. Is it really that serious? And he was reformed. He practically earned a law degree in prison. He earned what they call a legal education, whatever that means. And he exhausted all of his court appeals, spent hundreds and thousands, perhaps millions of dollars of the taxpayers' money down there in Texas before Barry sprung him, and now he's back in the clink. Before he was arrested for intent to distribute 500 grams or more of cocaine, Mr. Gill was employed as a paralegal for a local criminal defense firm, LaHood and Kalfas, there in San Antonio. No word on whether or not he's been suspended from his job as a paralegal. I guess that would depend on how much cocaine he distributed to the lawyers there at... No, I'm just kidding. Please, don't have them call me. The last thing I want to do is hear from LaHood and Kalfas. I'm sure they had no idea They probably thought that Mr. Gill was as pure as the wind-driven snow, having been re-educated and rehabilitated and eventually even commuted by the great Barack Obama. But in the end, at least in this case, for the moment, justice has the last laugh. All right, we've got to come back, ladies and gentlemen, because everyone knows that if we don't, that Alex Lifeson will just go on and on and on and on and on with that one. By the way, that reminds me, I have an associate in Thailand as we speak. A business associate of mine went over to Thailand, and he found himself in Vietnam, and where he found that he could get a custom tailor suit for $200. So he calls me up on WhatsApp. Are you guys familiar with WhatsApp? It's a texting type of messaging app. Anyway, he calls me for free on WhatsApp on my phone. And he says, Doug, do you want a custom tailored suit? It's wool, cashmere, and silk. And some nylon. Anyway, it's 100% wool, silk, and I said, $200 for a custom tailored suit? I said, I'll take you up on that. Are you sure you're not just doing this? He said, no. He said, I'm here. I'm getting two suits. I said, I'll take two suits. And he said, well, you've got to measure yourself. So I measured. I went online, Google, right? I Googled measurement suit, tailored suit measurement, something like that. And I got a worksheet that you could go through. And you could measure every part of your body for a custom tailored suit. And then my extremely attractive audio engineer made as a part of our children's homeschool regimen. Here is now how you measure someone for a custom tailored suit. Should any of our children end up in the garment industry, they now have some experience in measuring a man for a custom fit suit. I got all my measurements together. And it's quite the elaborate thing. There are measurements. I don't know how they're relevant, but apparently they are. Took all the measurements, about 20 or 30 measurements altogether. And I sent them via email to my associate there in Saigon or wherever he is on a flat-bottom boat smacking mosquitoes, getting me a custom-tailored suit. And he calls me the next night. He says, Doug, the tailor, he doesn't quite understand these measurements. I said, you know, I figured the measurements are pretty much a standard thing. I said, should I have done centimeters instead of? He said, no, that's not it. They understand inches. They're just not sure exactly what each one of these are. So here's what happened. He goes on to Google, in Vietnam, mind you, while he's on the phone for free on WhatsApp with me, and he downloads, just by Googling the same thing I Google, he downloads the same document that I use to get all my measurements. And then he went through with the tailor, the fine Vietnamese tailor there, and they figured out all my measurements. And so as we speak, I am having two custom tailored suits manufactured for me personally in Vietnam. And I don't know, my friend may be able to fax them to me. The technology is incredible. I told him, I said, it's amazing. I'm on the phone with you. You're in Vietnam. I'm in Colorado, and I'm talking to you for free, and we're ordering a custom suit. He said, this is amazing. I said, it's just incredible. And so I will give you all an update if we ever see the suits. I had a friend who went to Turkey, and he bought a custom rug. Now, the check cleared, from what I understand, or the credit card was charged, but the rug never made it to America. And it was several thousands of dollars that my friend was taken for by a rug merchant there in Turkey. And so hopefully the tailor there in Saigon or Ho Chi Minh City or wherever they are, hopefully he's an honest and upright business dealer, and my associate will return with the suits. All right, so there you have it, the wonders of modern technology at work. And in the meantime, speaking of the wonders of modern technology, I want to talk a little bit about ultrasound. And this story is just, well, I'll just read the story. This is from the Metro in the United Kingdom. A young mother, 27 years old in the United Kingdom, Haley Lampshire, discovered that she was pregnant with twins, which in England, it's like, stop the presses. A woman is going to have two children, virtually doubling England's birth rate just all by herself, at least for that week. And so everybody was quite excited about the fact that Haley was pregnant. By the way, Haley and her husband, Charlie, were married in 2015 and were thrilled to find out that Haley was pregnant a few months after the marriage, which is somewhat unique in the modern era. She got pregnant after. Anyway, Haley finds out she's pregnant with twins, but there's a catch. During ultrasonic examination of the twins, it was discovered by doctors that the two twins shared one amniotic sac, instead of each of them having their own amniotic sac. And this is a problem because doctors told mom that if the babies move around in the womb, their umbilical cords could become tangled. And this can starve the child. It can rob either one or both of the children of essential nutrients. Or it could actually strangle one of the children, and one of the children could die. Doctors told the mom that the only way the children would survive the pregnancy was if they both stayed still. Now, can you imagine hearing this kind of news? Got to be devastating. So the mother and father are, well, they're somewhat concerned, obviously. But she goes home, and they talk about it, and they deal with it. They prepare themselves psychologically for the fact that this could be a very complicated pregnancy. There could be problems. After a few weeks, she went back for a scan, and she saw the two boys cuddling each other, and they appeared to be holding hands. And at every subsequent scan, mom, Haley, was amazed to see her twins holding on to each other. They were holding hands, and they were very still. They were not moving around. It's almost as if the kids heard the doctor, and they're like, okay, man, we better hold still. So they held each other's hands, and they didn't move around. And the mom and dad were amazed as they went through these scans that these two baby boys held on to each other. And the boys were finally delivered by C-section. And they are both now doing, according to the doctors, they're doing, quote, very well, unquote. And it's just amazing. It's amazing because we're talking about the miracle of modern technology. And in the past, mom, dad, the babies, they wouldn't have known about this impending threatening condition. Nobody would have known. But they knew. And so the doctors were able to watch closely. Mom and dad were able to take it easy and do what they needed to do. And I don't know, maybe the kids were listening. I don't know. I'm not superstitious. I'm just saying maybe these kids, they start paying attention a lot sooner than you might think. So it's never too soon to start educating your child. Even in utero, they seem to have been paying attention in this case. And it's a great story. We don't do a whole lot of happy news here, and this is happy. Congratulations to Haley and Charlie and the boys. We're glad to hear that you're doing well, and we're thankful for the virtual miracles of modern technology. It's awesome. And so now we're going to go from there into the personhood file. By the way, Haley and Charlie's baby boys, as they were holding on to each other and cuddling and maybe listening. Anyway, they are people. They're people. So we go into the personhood file appropriately, and now we're going to continue to discuss ultrasounds, but we're going to discuss ultrasounds at Planned Parenthood. Yes, yes, Planned Parenthood. As you know, Donald Trump is one of the advocates of Planned Parenthood's critical services to women, especially pregnant women, prenatal care and things like that. Some of the great things they do, some of the wonderful work, I believe, is what our president called Planned Parenthood's efforts to provide critical prenatal care to pregnant women. Well, Lila Rose over at Live Action has been releasing a series of undercover videos. Breitbart reports that she's been investigating Planned Parenthood's claim that it offers prenatal care to pregnant women, including ultrasounds. And so Lila Rose and Live Action, her team, they started calling Planned Parenthoods throughout the country asking if they could have an ultrasound to check on the health status of their unborn baby. One of Lila's team members would call up Planned Parenthood. Brrr, hello, yes. I'm wondering if I could come in to get an ultrasound to check on the health of my unborn child. And shockingly enough, somebody covered Donald Trump's ears. Shockingly enough, Planned Parenthood was unable to provide a prenatal ultrasound for any of the mothers on Lila's team who presented Planned Parenthood with the scenario of a mother who wanted to check the health status of her child. As a matter of fact, when they called the Planned Parenthood in Farmington, New Mexico, they asked, can I get a ultrasound? I want to check on the health of my unborn child. I want to check on the health status of my pregnancy. And the worker there at Planned Parenthood in Farmington, New Mexico, and this is all on tape. You can check out the videos. We will provide a link. The worker there at Planned Parenthood, upon hearing that the mom wanted to check on the health status of her pregnancy, said, we like specialize in like abortions, you know, that's what our ultrasounds are like for, to see how far along the patient is. And so Lila's team members were unable to get help there, so they called St. Paul, Minnesota, where a Planned Parenthood worker said, we do ultrasounds when performing abortion services. Abortion procedures. Not able to help in St. Paul. So in Corning, New York, of course, the Planned Parenthood staff member said, we only do ultrasounds if you're terminating. Are you terminating? Come on down. Otherwise, we're not able to help you. That's Corning, New York. And in location after location after location, they were not offered the wonderful, important work that Planned Parenthood does in prenatal ultrasounds for pregnant women. And let's see. Live Action President Lila Rose is on a crusade to promote the defunding of Planned Parenthood and the redirection of its taxpayer funds to other health care centers. So it's unfortunate that this is what Lila Rose's career has degenerated into, that instead of exposing the obvious ills of the baby-murdering industry for what it is and calling for an end to the murder of innocent children, you know, Lila now says she wants to just defund Planned Parenthood. And that's disappointing, because I met Lila and I thought she had a lot of potential. But she has been sucked into the pro-life industry. And Lila, I just want to warn you that if you defund Planned Parenthood, Bill Gates will refund them. Along with the freak who runs Tesla and the freaks at PayPal and all the perverts and the leftists, they'll probably fund it double. And the fact that taxpayer money does not fund the murder of innocent children, that does not relieve us of one iota of guilt for tolerating it in our midst. And the goal should really be to stand up for the fact that these are people being murdered for money, by the way, legally. That should be the goal. But we do appreciate Lila's efforts. And I understand that it's tough. I understand it's difficult, Lila. Personhood is not easy. I lived through it here in Colorado. We put it on the ballot three times. Three times the voters rejected it. And each time the political advisors and the strategists and the lawyers, they told us, you know, you don't want to get involved in a losing political campaign. Because if you lose too much, people are going to stop supporting you and your efforts will all be for naught. And despite the fact that there continues to be efforts legislation to reestablish the personhood of every innocent person in America who deserves the right to life, those efforts are ignored, or they fail at the ballot box, or when justices even rule in court cases that an unborn child is a person and has the right to, say, inheritance and things like that, they're just ignored. Just ignore, because Roe versus Wade is considered established law, and it's just a very difficult battle. But here's the thing you have to keep in mind to Lila and all the others who at one point or another have worked to reestablish the personhood of the innocents who are being slaughtered, is that it's not about the ballot box. It's not even about people supporting you. It's not about a successful fundraising campaign, and it's not even about a successful political campaign. It's about making people take sides. It's about speaking the truth and giving the righteous the opportunity to stand for what's right, and giving the wicked the opportunity to heap coals of burning hellfire upon their heads. That's what it's about. Because I am not naive enough to believe that through some political machination that we are going to stop the murder of innocent people, unborn children in particular in America. There's been too much blood. There's too much guilt. It's going to be an ugly, ugly thing. But we still stand up for what's right, and we teach our own children. That's what Lila Rose should do. Hey, Lila, resign from your post at, where is this? She's at Live Action. I'm sure it's all wonderful. You should quit and have children, Lila, because at least you could raise your children to know the truth and to not murder innocent people, and they could live forever with the living God, along with you, and then that would be worthwhile. As far as defunding Planned Parenthood, I think you're wasting your time. It'd be better to focus on your own family, as the leftists like to tell us. So there's my advice to Lila Rose, is get married and have some kids, Lila, for crying out loud. You're not getting any younger, you know. All right, now let's move to the Boy Scouts in the culture file. CNN reports that the Boy Scouts of America, now this is not going to come as a shock to anyone who's been paying attention, the Boy Scouts of America will begin accepting members based on their gender identity, which means they are opening the door to transgender boys to join the Boy Scouts. And by the way, that means girls. Transgender boys, that they could have easily put mentally ill girls. Or girls abused by their parents, teachers, social workers, lawyers, and assorted perverts. Transgendered boys are actually girls who have been victimized by the culture and their parents, or they're just mentally deranged. But the new policy is taking effect immediately, by the way. They didn't even have to have a board meeting. They didn't have to have a vote on it. They just immediately capitulated and said, let the trannies in. Because after all, we've already let in the queers, so, you know, who are we to judge at this point? We obviously don't know right from wrong anymore. And anyway, so they're going to rely now, instead of, as in the past, believe it or not, the Boy Scouts used to rely on a birth certificate. Now, that's really old-fashioned to rely on a birth certificate to establish if someone is, say, a boy. Because the name of the group, by the way, is the Boy Scouts, which they're probably going to have to change that pretty soon. Because I think that engenders some sort of gender hostility, just calling it the Boy Scouts. Well, they're no longer going to rely on birth certificates. Instead, they say they are going to change. They say this approach, the birth certificate approach, it's no longer sufficient, as communities and state laws are interpreting gender identity differently. And these laws vary widely from state to state. So we have to make the change, according to Boy Scouts of America spokeswoman Effie. That's her name, is Effie. She said in a statement last Monday, because the last thing she wanted to do was actually stand up on a podium and take questions about the fact that they can't figure out how to tell boys from girls anymore in the Boy Scouts. She did not, so she just released a statement. She says the change brings the Boy Scouts in line with the Girl Scouts, which no longer can really be called the Girl Scouts. Maybe we'll have to think up another name before the trannies and the perverts file a lawsuit based on the name Boy Scout and Girl Scout. Maybe the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts should preemptively capitulate and just call themselves, I don't know, I can't think of anything off the cuff that's not so vulgar that I could even say it, so I'll leave that to your imagination. We'll just call them the Scouts from here on out. Let's see, the Boy Scouts here, we've got another statement that was released by the Chief Scout Executive. Michael, he says, I hope you'll join with me in embracing the opportunity to bring scouting to more families and children. Not just the boys, not just the girls, but everyone in between. In between, on the left, on the right, on this side, that side, it doesn't matter. How do you want to identify? We've got a tent for you at the Scouts. So they're opening to more families and more children. He says, we want to bring the benefits of scouting to the greatest number of youth possible, all while remaining true to our core beliefs. Remaining true to their core beliefs. I thought part of that was being morally straight. Didn't morally straight used to mean that? I guess that maybe they took that out of the oath, the morally straight part, all while remaining true to their core beliefs. I shouldn't even laugh, but it's laughable. The Scouts are a laughable institution anymore. That's all. Now, let's run through these stories quickly, because I don't want my extremely attractive audio engineer to become disgusted and leave the room. But we've got a story here from Texas. From the Abby Normal file. Did you ever watch Young Frankenstein? All right, this is from the Abby Normal file. The first transgendered elected official has come out publicly in the state of Texas. Not the first tranny ever elected, just the first one in Texas to come out and acknowledge it in public. It's the mayor of New Hope. You can't make up the irony here. New Hope in Collin County, Texas. Mayor, let's see, what's her name here? Wait a second here. I'm not sure if it, as your mayor, I must tell you, I am transgender, says Jess Herbst. So apparently it's a boy who became a girl. And the mayor came out in an open letter posted on the town's website. And listen to what Jess Herbst, who is a man, by the way, when he was elected mayor of New Hope, Collin County, Texas, Mr. Herbst was a man. But now he says he's Jess. He's put makeup on. If you see the pictures, I'll post a link. This is a fairly attractive man who's become an extremely ugly woman. Just, I mean, I don't want to be personal about it, but I mean, come on. A picture says 1,000 words. And the picture of this fella that he posted on the website should be an advertisement on why you should not transition. Because just for purely aesthetic reasons, leave aside the rest. But we shouldn't leave aside the rest. I'm sorry. Jess came out and said, I love my wife and she loves me. We have no intention of change. He said as he put on a wig and lipstick and a skirt. He says, my daughters are proud. He says, my daughters are proud to tell people their father is transgender. Well, Dad, did you ever think they might just be, you know, just kind of going along to get along, trying not to hurt your feelings? No, he says they're proud to tell people that Daddy is transgender. See that skirt? That's my daddy's skirt. Yeah. He says, my wife and I have no intention of change, but I live my life as a female now. That's not a big change, but there was some change there. But his wife has agreed not to acknowledge it, and his children have apparently agreed to entertain him in his spiral down into mental illness. And, well, we probably will not be able to follow Jess Herbst because, well, there will be an avalanche of trannies pouring out of the closet over the next few months. It'll be hard to keep track of them all. But I can assure you that in a familial sense, this is not going to end well. And I feel sorry for the guy's kids. And I feel, well, I don't feel sorry for the wife. She should be freaking out and filing for divorce. But instead, she's going to entertain him in his mental illness, and that is a sin that should not be tolerated. And it should be shameful, but whatever. Now it's just a laughing stock, is what it is. By the way, Mr. Herbst was a man when he was elected. Just to be clear, because I know these stories get somewhat confusing, we move on from the Abby Normal file to the Decline and Fall file. South Carolina is now the 43rd state, according to thestate.com, to have an openly gay legislator. It's just the latest. You got homo legislators pouring out of the closet. And this one, Representative Jason, he's a 46-year-old divorce attorney. And he says of himself and his family that we accept the fact that people are different from us. And that we are a state that is moving toward being open to folks who aren't exactly like us. All right, so Josh, or Jason, I'm sorry. Jason, 46-year-old divorce attorney, comes out as a homosexual in South Carolina's legislature. First of all, Jason, I could barely tolerate you as a legislator because of what all that engenders. But I'm willing to tolerate you as a legislator, even though you're not exactly like me. I'm willing to tolerate the fact that you're from South Carolina and you probably have a bit of an accent and you don't talk exactly like me. I'm willing to accept that. But when it comes to the fact that you're now an open flaming homosexual advocating devious perverted activity in front of the children and God and everybody, that I will not tolerate. And it's not that you're not exactly like me. It's that you are the polar opposite of me. You are the anti-me. And homosexuality is anti-Christ. Because at the beginning, Jesus told us, that God created the male and female from the beginning of the creation. So homosexuality is anti-Christ. It's more than not exactly, okay? That's what I'm trying to get at. The other states, by the way, believe it or not, there are other states that have yet to elect an openly homosexual legislator. And we have the list.
We've got the list. That's right. Alaska, Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Nebraska, Tennessee. Huh? Who's not wearing the ribbon?
If there's anything at all, ladies and gentlemen, that we will be sued for, it will be using that song from one of the most staunchly heterosexual people on the planet. In that context, we apologize, Mr. Hagar, in advance. Now, last week, the title of the show threw some people for a loop. First of all, I was not at 100%, ladies and gentlemen, last week. And it's not that I want to apologize. I just want to remind you that you can't hit a home run every time you step to the plate, okay? So just please bear with what happened last week. It was the best I could do. I was under the influence of drugs and illness and a virus. And so you'll have to forgive me for that. But people were confused by the title of the show, Without a Side in the World. So I want to explain it because I may not have been clear last week. This past week, if you watched what happened at UC Berkeley, as Milo Yiannopoulos, who is an advocate of homosexuality, is what he is. He's a sex pervert, and I don't know what else about him because I pretty much can't get past that. But he's been advertised as a conservative commentator, a conservative editor of the conservative Breitbart website. And I'm sorry, folks, you cannot reject the most fundamental thing about yourself and reality and tell me you're a conservative. So Milo is not a conservative. And the people burning down UC Berkeley, they're not conservatives either. But so many people have been lulled into this idea that now these freaks and perverts and liberals are conservatives. And Donald Trump is the ultimate example of that. A liberal who has bamboozled the conservatives into believing he's some kind of conservative. Just because you want to kill terrorists and lower taxes, that does not make you a conservative. Just because you want to build a wall to prevent illegal immigration, I'm sorry, that's not conservative. That's just common sense policy. It's not conservative. Is number one, being able to call reality for what it is, even if that makes other people uncomfortable. Milo, you're a man. You're not supposed to be having sex with other men, and you're certainly not supposed to be talking about it in public, you sick pervert. Okay? So I'm not on Milo's side. Now, I'm not on the side of the freaks and the ninja warriors of the left there, who were burning down Berkeley to stop Milo from going on stage and talking about whatever he talks about. And so I don't have a side. I got a story here. I do have a side, by the way, and I'll clarify after I finish this. This is from the Left is Right file. Protesters stormed NYU over what the New York Post calls a conservative speaker's seminar. Well, the speaker was a comedian named Gavin McInnes. Have you guys seen this guy? If this qualifies as a conservative, you may as well put a stake in the heart of the title conservative and bury it right now because it's over. He's a foul-mouthed crotch comic who barely made it on a show called Red Eye with that other pervert who I refuse to watch on Fox News. What's that guy's name? The guy who used to write for Maxim magazine. Greg Gutfeld, that pervert who now qualifies as a conservative, even though he's an advocate of every type of sexual immorality that there is on the planet. And just every type of morality, frankly. Greg Gutfeld, this pervert, Gavin McInnes, Milo Yiannopoulos, these are conservatives. Get out of here with that. They are not on my side. And I would not light my campus on fire if they were coming to speak. And I don't think they should be kept from speaking in public. But they should not be allowed to advocate sexual immorality and perversion and what should be criminal acts, which is what Yiannopoulos and McGinnis and the other pervert there, the smart aleck, I can't even remember his name, the guy who got his own show. Get out of here with that, Gutfeld, yeah. Go back and write for your dirty magazines, Gutfeld. I'm not buying it. You're not a conservative. And I would take on any one of these chumps face-to-face on the air. In fact, we may reach out to Milo. In fact, we may make an effort to reach out to Milo. I'll be discussing that with the powers that be here in the not-too-distant future. All right, now, speaking of who is a conservative anymore, let's go to the Domestic Tranquility File, where CBS in Chicago is reporting that gang members in Chicago, I said gang members in Chicago, are ready to sit down and work with the White House to reduce violent crime in Chicago. And there's a pastor of a megachurch out there who says he would like to organize a meeting between gang members who are slaughtering each other at a record pace and filling the streets of Chicago with blood every night. Now they want to sit down and talk with the president in order to, quote, reduce the body count. That's the goal now. Of conservatives. Let's just reduce the body count. So, hey, maybe the gangsters in Chicago who are dealing heroin and crack and trafficking in prostitutes who are basically slaves, maybe they're conservatives now because they want to sit down and talk to Donald Trump and his administration because they say, quote, this is what the gang members say, according to this moronic, idiotic pastor, Daryl Scott, senior pastor at the New Revival Center in Cleveland Heights, Ohio. He says that the gangsters in Chicago, they believe in this administration. They believe, Mr. President, they're ready to sit down, lower the body count. That's what it's all about. They're going to commit that if they lower the body count, that Mr. Trump and the administration, they're going to come in and do some social programs. That's what it's all about. Mr. Trump got the news. From Mr. Scott, who has audience with Mr. Trump. Trump's response to the idea of sitting down with the gang members who are responsible for the violence and bloodshed in Chicago. Trump said, I think it's a great idea. It's great. It's great. It's a huge idea. It's great. So you're going to sit down with, all right. So that's, by the way, that's from the Domestic Tranquility File. We'll move on now as we rapidly run out of time, ladies and gentlemen, from the Politics File. This is from Barry's War. Yeah, this is the Barry's War file. You may have heard of Trump's War. Barry's War continues. A Dateline Park City, Utah Breitbart reports that at the close of the Sundance Film Festival, those standing in solidarity with protesters of the Dakota Access Pipeline met in Park City. Melania Trump was there. We reported on it last week. And Dave John, who is the Tiwa Navajo Indian spokesperson, and the guy who's actually standing out in the snow there in North Dakota, he's the treasurer of the group that organized an event protesting out there. And he says, we're going to do a march. We hope it'll be peaceful. We stand with Standing Rock. And we have flash grenades, beanbags, and rubber bullets. Just we hope it's going to be peaceful. Mr. John explained that he was there with others gathered to fight mostly for water. He says people asked the lead Indian there who's leading the protest of the Dakota Access Pipeline. When asked what they were doing, he said fighting for water mostly. Well, there's also the getting high and the cruising, but, you know, we'll leave that aside. They were holding signs that said, water is life. When you poison water, little babies die, they said. And I stand with Standing Rock. This is Barack Obama's new, what would you call it, his new adventure? This is his new war. He's organizing the protests that are happening around the country. He's organizing the protests at the airport. He's organizing the protests out at Dakota Access Pipeline, and that's what they're going to do. And this is now the new normal. Along with the machete-wielding knife attacks, we will have protests daily of relatively unattractive hippie types with their illegible signs, with way too many words. You know, I'm telling you, if you're going to be protesting, maximum 6 words on a sign, okay? I mean, these people, I mean, they have the Magna Carta on their sign for, you can't make out anything, and they look stoned, and they look like they smell bad. So who wants to read 14 paragraphs on your sign? But anyway, that's where we are. But Madeleine Albright, she's ready to do something about it from the politics file. Madeleine Albright, who surprisingly enough is still alive, proving that the living God is very merciful. She says she's prepared to register as a Muslim to be in solidarity with refugees. At which point someone told her, Madam Secretary, there's no need to register as anything. Why would you want to register? She says, hey, she says, I was raised a Catholic. I became Episcopalian. I found out later that my family was Jewish. Now, if I need to register as a Muslim, I'll do it. I'm ready. Because she doesn't really care. She has no person. I mean, there's no soul. There's no heart there. She'll do whatever. Madeleine Albright. She says, I stand ready to register as a Muslim, even though there is no registry. What's that now? Yes, well, if there's not a registry, perhaps she'll begin a registry. But if she was properly screened under the extreme vetting that is being orchestrated right now at the highest levels of government, it's obvious to anyone paying attention that Madeleine Albright would have to register as a shrill, ugly lesbian with bad lipstick. Yes, she would be in the Phil Hartman section. that's right. Yeah, Gloria Steinem has also vowed to become a Muslim if there ever is a registry, and they were quite offended to find out that there wasn't a registry, and they're working on that. Let's see, do we have? I don't know that I have any more. Oh, Iran has tested a ballistic missile, and everyone's upset with Donald Trump for being belligerent with Iran. You know that war with Iran, in my opinion. War with Iran sooner rather than later is better. I believe I called for the bombing or the invasion of Iran to start back in 2011. Do you guys remember when the hapless Benjamin Netanyahu had his goofy bomb cartoon with the red line going through the flaming, what do you call it on a bomb there? The flaming wick there that he held up at the UN. Do you all remember that? The bad cartoon, I think it was 2011, maybe 2013. At that was the point at which I called for war on Iran. And by the way, folks, I think if we invaded Iran, I think we would be shocked at the Iranian citizens who would turn over the people to us. Does anybody remember how Barack Obama abandoned the true Arab Spring that started there in 2009? I think, anyway, I'm okay with being belligerent with Iran. I call for war with them sooner rather than later. The last thing we want to do is have to engage a nuclear-armed Iran. And for those of you who think they are not hell-bent on acquiring nuclear weapons and using them, you are naive and foolish, and you're disqualified from the conversation. All right, now finally, we pointed out earlier the benevolence and the mercy of the living God that is on display every day in the fact that we're all allowed to take another breath and the fact that Madeleine Albright has been allowed, the bad lipstick and all, to take another breath. and to vow to register as a Muslim. Liberals are quite concerned about the health of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Yes, according to San Francisco Chronicle here, liberals are quite concerned about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She's 83 years old. She looks 120. She's 83. And the San Francisco Chronicle calls her a mascot to the left. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg's career has devolved to the fact that despite the fact that she sits on the United States Supreme Court, she is a mascot to the left. She's the equivalent of a stuffed animal being carried into the Super Bowl down in Houston this weekend. She's a mascot, and they all want to prop her up and make sure that she's alive. They've been posting about her diet, and is she exercising? How is she feeling? Is she walking? Is she getting enough fresh air? Can she eat more kale? The liberals are asking of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And so we will end today's broadcast with our sincere hope that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, as soon as humanly possible, be introduced personally to the living God of the universe. And if that means she has to pass from the scene, then so be it. I mean, there are people who say you should never wish ill upon anyone, but I disagree. Those who have done ill upon others deserve to have ill wished upon them. And so, and let me just tell you that the meeting between Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the living God and the judge of all the universe, that will be one ill event for Ms. Ginsburg. So it can't come soon enough, and well, we hope it goes well for her. How about that? To try to end on a positive note, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, where I'll be joining Pastor Enyart on the regular terrestrial radio tomorrow if you want to listen in. We'll be on there. I want to thank my friends at, AmericanRightToLife.com, and of course, my other brother, Darrell, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.